Right. Well, I mean, I think you've really hit on the core of the book, of course, because Sarah is so brilliant. But that is kind of the heart of the book.
She wrote it, but the readers will hear it, will see it once they pick it up, too.
Well, I mean, Searching for Sylvie Lee has actually hit a lot of most anticipated lists. Mm-hmm. And some of the lists that it hits are crime lists or mystery or suspense and thriller lists. And when they first started doing that, I was like, wow, that hadn't occurred to me that it could do that, because it is definitely a mystery. I mean, it is absolutely, I wrote it trying to write a page turner. I wanted to write a page turner, but I didn't think of it as I'm going to write a mystery. I thought of it, just like you said, of trying to represent a family story and a love story and the relationship between mothers and daughters and between sisters in a mystery context. I mean, it's a mystery because she's disappeared and we need to figure out what's happened to her. So I had the idea of braiding together three narratives, and I've never done that before. I've actually never had multiple narrators in my novels because I'm a very easily distracted person. And I like if I just get really lost in a book sometimes when I'm following one narrator and then suddenly I'm switching to someone else. I'm like, wait, wasn't she eating the ice cream? And now someone else is plunging off a cliff. Like, I don't know what's going on. It's hard for me. So
you get emotionally invested in
I want her to eat the ice cream. Yeah. I do not want that
to
person
jump over to another
the cliff.
Person.
Yeah. So I struggled with that. But then what I thought with this novel was that I could backdate Sylvie's story. So Sylvie's narrative, Sylvie's the one who disappears. Sylvie's narrative starts a month earlier than Amy's. And what that means is that Amy, the younger sister, is finding clues, and she's taking off and going to the Netherlands and finding clues about Sylvie. And we see Sylvie taking off and going through those experiences. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of work to actually make that interesting and not repetitive, so that the reader's getting all kinds of information that each of the narrators doesn't have. But then the extra thing that I put in it that was really interesting to me is that indeed Sylvie had been sent away as a baby. And that's something that people are like, oh my God, how could you do that to a baby? And it is heartbreaking, but it does happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know people who it's happened to. I know people who have done it, because when you're working class and working day and night just to try to survive, you know, it's sometimes actually almost impossible to take care of a baby.
And it's 4:44. You're listening to Afternoon Jazz at 90.5 FM WSNC Winston-Salem. Jazz and all its colors from the campus of Winston-Salem State University. I'm Jim Steele. You're listening to Bookmark with Sarah McCoy. In the studio this afternoon with Sarah is New York Times bestselling author Jane Kwok. She's talking about her new book, Searching for Sylvie Lee. The conversation will continue this evening at 7 p.m. at Bookmark's bookstore here in Winston-Salem.
Okay.
Are we done?
No, we're not. Okay, so back to what we were talking about. So you were saying that Chinese, you're a working class and your family clearly was, because they were just trying to make it, I mean, as the American dream, they had just come over. And so you understand that does happen, that children are sent
away. So what happened to Sylvie's parents was that when she was born, they just could not manage to make ends meet and take care of a baby. So they did what, you know, other families have done, which is they sent her back to the grandmother to be raised. They hoped for a short time until they could take care of her. And the grandmother had already moved to the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. And so Sylvie was given to the grandmother in the Netherlands and lived there for the first 9 years of her life. And they had tried constantly to bring her back and they had not succeeded. And it was only after Amy was born, and Amy was 2 years old, that actually Sylvie was able to come back. So when I was telling the story, you know, I have Amy, who's really American. She's mm-hmm. Chinese-American, but she's born in the U.S. She thinks in English. We have Ma, who barely speaks English and therefore thinks in Chinese, and mm-hmm. Sylvie, who thinks in Dutch. And one of the things I was interested in, because I speak those languages, is how, you know, a lot of times you meet someone who doesn't speak English very well and you kind of make a judgment. You know, you think, well, you know, he's maybe, you know, he's fine, but maybe not super bright. You know, you do make those assumptions because they're having such a hard time communicating. And I know how erroneous that is, right, because I've seen it with my own parents, yeah, that in their own language, they're totally different. And so that's something I try to show in the book, that, for example, we see Ma through Amy's eyes. And Ma is a very simple, though beloved, woman who speaks broken English. But then we enter Ma's chapter, and we realize Ma is profound and deep and beautiful.
Poetic,
yeah,
yes,
exactly. And so, and Amy doesn't see that. So that's a part of what makes it a mystery, mm-hmm, is that there's so many things they don't see about each other, so many things they don't know. And I think it's about how, you know, when the language of your heart is different from the language that those you love the most speak, and that happens a lot in an immigrant family, when the kids speak English, but the parents have not learned it, you know, there can arise a gap where it's very hard to truly know each other.
I love that, and I want to go back to what you said and emphasize it, because I thought it was so poignant and well done. So my grandparents are Puerto Rican. My mother is Puerto Rican. So their heart language is Spanish,
right?
And so that, I even think about how my mother relates to them, because she grew up speaking, they wanted her to speak English to them.
Mine too. My parents wanted me to speak only English.
Right. Yeah. So that way she'd have an accent. She
had
any
they were
of those
worried
issues.
About survival.
Right. And yet I think, I told my mom I'm going to send her this book because I said, you need to read this. And she knows. It's true, right, Mom? So because I think that interaction between mother and daughters, my mother is one of three girls. And so I just thought, the way even that you have portrayed how they interpret their own mother and that relationship there, because the languages are different, that was so touching to me. And I thought, oh my gosh, I wonder how my grandparents in their own language are probably totally different people than even what I know.
Right, and that's
because they're more fluent and they're more comfortable and learned in that language, and they know how to express themselves. That's the most important thing.
Exactly, exactly. And that's actually what I'm hoping, one of the things I'm hoping that readers will take away from the book. Of course, they can read it as a mystery and hopefully really enjoy it as a suspenseful mystery, but I'm kind of hoping they'll have thoughts like that too. What are my parents like? What is that person? What's my Uber driver like? You know, what is what is behind that curtain of language? It's very interesting to me. And of course, even more than that, aside from just the language, you know, your grandparents gave up a whole world to come here. And what was that world? And who were they in that world? I mean, those are fascinating questions.
You are just leading into one of my points here. I said, have you created a new genre? I think so. And I'm going to argue for this. The immigrant mystery. Because when you think about it, all immigrants, we all in America are from some sort of transient background. We did not all originate here except for the Native Americans. And so if we are all immigrants and we all don't really know our story, then it's a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
All of our past, why is this like, you know, genealogy sites are so popular right now. People get on, they want to know, what is my history? What is the mystery behind my past and my people?
Right.
And so I felt like, that's what she's done. It's not, because, you know, I was trying to put it on a shelf somewhere. Is this a mystery? Is this crime? Is this family drama? Is this a love story? What's going on? It's all of those. And then I thought, Jean is so brilliant. She has created her own genre.
Wow.
It is the immigrant mystery.
You're hearing it for the first time here from Sarah McCoy.
Exactly. Booksellers across the nation, clear off
new,
the shelf.
New plank, new
a
shelf.
A new place. Now I have to go write one so I can join my friend Jean there. So So that's, I think you did that so well.
Well, thank you. It's something that is very close to my heart. And what you just said is actually exactly what I was thinking, that in some ways I applied techniques of the psychological thriller to an immigrant story. And so, you know, a lot of times you read a psychological thriller and it's really exciting, but the narrator's unreliable because maybe she's a drunk or she's on drugs or she's mentally unstable.
She's hiding something, truth, yeah.
Exactly. But then I thought, well, you know, my narrators are unreliable, but not because of any of those things, but because they're human, you know? We're all mysteries to each other,
yes,
actually. We all choose what to show what to believe, what to see. How someone else sees us is often very different from how we see ourselves. That's why they're unreliable, because we all are, actually. You know, every story is unreliable. The only reliable narrators are actually in novels, where the novelist has control over the entire world.
That is absolutely, that's so true. I think my husband and I were just talking about that, about how, you know, the way you perceive what you have said is totally different than the way that
even anyone in a relationship knows this. It's like, you said that. I didn't
want to go into my marital conversation there, but since we went there, exactly. Like the way you have to stop and almost say, okay, you have to be an omniscient narrator, right, and stop and say, okay, if I were sitting over here and I wasn't me and I wasn't him, how would the tone of my voice have been interpreted? Or how would, while I was saying this and doing this, how would that be interpreted? And I thought, you brought that to light so brilliantly. So this is Jean Kwok. We have been talking. Clearly, we could go on and on, and we will go on and on. Tonight at Bookmarks at 7 p.m., we will be, again, in conversation there. And I've got, that was only a few of the questions. I've got a whole another list of things to ask her about, and you definitely want to be here and be in on this conversation. So here, if Jim wants to get a little scroll into this, these are the details for tonight at Bookmarks in Winston-Salem. That is where we will be discussing, and we welcome all readers to come out. It's a rainy night, so you want to be indoors. Come, get cozy with us, and we'll have this chat about Searching for Sylvie Lee, which is my pick for June, too.
Thank you so much for having me, Sarah.
Thanks for coming.